Hey, howdy, day trippers. You're listening to the Day Tripper Podcast. This is episode 46. We're talking green energy with the mayor of Georgetown, Mr. Dale Ross. As usual, I'm joined by my co-host, Todd White.
Howdy, folks.
And our special guest, Dale Ross.
How's everybody?
Can you believe we're on number 46?
46!
Podcasts have almost caught up with my age. Oops, I didn't mean that. Hold on.
Let's go. Alright guys, so thank y'all for listening. Before we start, I just want to have a disclaimer. If y'all listen to the podcast a lot, y'all know the city of Georgetown sponsors us. We love working with them. However, they are not the sponsor of this podcast, just to get that out. We are not being paid to have Dale Ross on. We wanted to have him on because this is just such a cool topic. It's a really cool initiative. It has put Georgetown in the national spotlight. And so let's jump in and talk to Dale. But okay, so what I'm talking about is Georgetown, Texas is going to be the first mid-sized city or first city completely?
Well, we were the first city in the state of Texas, and up until Las Vegas in December, we were the largest in the United States to be 100% renewable energy.
100% renewable energy. Georgetown, Texas.
Wow.
What most people think is just this sea of red. We're big trucks, boots, and oil. We have defied the stereotypes that most people think about Texas and gone 100% renewable energy. So what exactly does that mean?
What that means is the city of Georgetown has 97 wind turbines up in the Amarillo area. And so last year, because of the good weather, we were able to use nothing but wind energy. But as we speak, our solar farm's being built out in Fort Stockton, okay? Uh-huh. And so that's going to come online in the first part of 18.
Okay.
Because we have to have solar and wind in a normal year in order to make this happen.
Okay.
Because during the day, during the high demand periods, you're going to have solar and you'll have to supplement that with wind. Now, when the sun goes down, wind will be enough to fuel the needs of the citizens of Georgetown. For those that don't know, Georgetown has its own city utility. It's Georgetown Utility Systems, mm-hmm. and we contract out for energy. Now, what was special about green energy, first and foremost, it was a business decision. We've signed 20 and 25-year contracts, and these are fixed-rate contracts. We pay the same price per kilowatt of energy in year one as we do in year 25. So we will have cost certainty. And what this has allowed us to do is you have two kinds of risk when you're talking about energy. One is market risk, which is the pricing, because cost of energy goes up or down.
Mm-hmm.
So we've taken away that risk, which is the price volatility.
Yeah, yeah.
The second risk that we wanted to minimize was regulatory risk, because all those geniuses in D.C. that like to regulate and additional regulation increase costs. When you're talking about green energy and you're talking about basically a windmill, a very sophisticated windmill, a very large windmill, and you have bunches of them up there, what's there to regulate? It's clean energy. And the same thing with solar panels out in West Texas.
So let me back up really quick, because that was a whole lot. And most of that just went right over my head.
Okay.
So let's step back briefly and why green energy? So if we have our own utility company.
We do.
Here in town.
We do.
Why green energy, and what exactly is it? When we say green energy, what qualifies as green energy?
Green energy is non-fossil fuels. So that will be wind by windmills and solar energy from solar panels.
Okay. So who we've chosen as our utility contractor has access to these?
Yeah, we have a farm up near Amarillo. I say we contracted with a vendor.
But this is like Georgetown's exclusive farm?
That's right.
Be getting 100% of the energy out of this thing?
That's right,
yeah.
Out of that one. And the same thing for the solar farm out near Fort Stockton.
Okay.
So
as we drive to these parts of Texas, we can wave at Georgetown's
And as of now,
farm.
We don't have the Georgetown logo on our wind turbines, but you know.
Please tell me that's coming.
It's coming. It's coming.
Awesome.
And, you know, maybe there's some advertising opportunities for those of you that own businesses. We have space on the windmill. And I'm just saying.
There's probably some javelinas and roadrunners out there that would see the logo.
Or people like us that drive to the far ends of the earth
and
would see those like we did recently heading up to Sweetwater.
I mean, gosh, you go up to Snyder, Texas, it is wind farm country up there.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as the eye can see.
And Sweetwater as well. I mean, Sweetwater is just amazing.
Too. their sign, their welcome to Sweetwater sign, is on one of those turbine blades, yeah, which you don't realize how big they are until you stand next to one, and it is just, they're gigantic.
They are massive. They are massive.
Especially when you see them when they're not put together and they're on the back of trucks and stuff.
So in essence, then, when we drive around town and we see houses that have the solar panels up on top of the roofs, we're doing that on a larger scale with the city of Georgetown.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Okay.
That's pretty cool. And so we know we predicted our energy needs, and this wind farm and this solar farm, when they're working together, are going to be enough for the next 25 years, you think? Or are we going to have to keep building and building?
Yeah, what we've done is we've calculated all the way out through 2028.
Cool.
Okay, so we have some time.
A CPA, so you can do that pretty well.
Well, I know numbers, but we have some really smart guys working at the city of Georgetown. Uh-huh. I mean, these guys talk and your eyes just glaze over. They're talking about shaping, you know, the energy curve and all this.
We won't put Todd in front of those
people. No, Todd, we won't put Todd in front of them. But,
no.
But what, you know, what the original deal was this was an economic decision. Back in 2008, I was on council, mm-hmm. and we were talking about the goal back then in 2008 was to have 30% of our energy portfolio as renewable. Now, what happened in 2012, we saw an opportunity in the market, and we have a really great general manager, Jim Briggs, mm-hmm. and he has a really good assistant named Chris Foster. And these two guys put this plan together. There was an opportunity in the market, and we took advantage of that opportunity. And so,
you mean like a dip in the price that allowed us to lock in a good rate over the next many, many years?
That was part of it. The other part of it was you had more supply.
Okay.
Than demand, and so we had a pretty good negotiating position.
Cool.
Plus, if you do business with the city of Georgetown, we can guarantee you a revenue stream for 20 and 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah,
your banker really likes that if you're the wind supplier or the solar provider.
No kidding. Wow. So you did this, or the council did this, as a business decision?
First and foremost, it was to, our duty and obligation is to the ratepayers.
Yeah.
And our obligation is to have dependable and cost-effective energy. And that's what we've been able to accomplish with these contracts on wind and solar.
Very cool. And Georgetown's not getting any smaller. I mean, my goodness, we were the fastest growing city in the country last year.
Yeah.
So this wind farm can scale up with us.
Yeah, we have other opportunities. I mean, we have enough, even with the 8% growth that we're predicting for the next 4 to 5 years each year.
Goodness.
Yeah, we're at 65,000 right now. And so, you know, you extrapolate that out, we could be at 90,000 in 5 years. And that's in the city limits proper.
Yeah.
That doesn't include the ETJ. Folks that live outside the city limits.
It's been crazy to see this city grow. I mean, I've been here for 17 years now, and it is nuts to watch. I mean, I was here before Wolf Ranch was here, which is our big shopping center, mm-hmm. and even before we had a movie theater of our own. It's been crazy to watch this city.
Last year, you guys were there, the Sheraton, the four-star hotel and convention center, which has really allowed us to share Georgetown with the world.
Yeah.
So here's one of the questions I've always wondered, and I'm sure you can answer this. We buy this energy that is created, manufactured, gathered somewhere outside of Georgetown. How does that energy get here? How does that translate into usable energy in our homes when I flip on my switch? That's green energy.
Great question. I want to give credit to, Rick Perry, who was the longest serving governor in our history at 14 years, and now he's the
energy secretary
he is
up there.
Indeed. Now, what he hasn't gotten credit for, his biggest credit, I think, just listening to newspapers and the media and citizens was, he was making the state of Texas this economic engine. And even during the Depression or the recession, Texas still prospered with new growth and businesses and stuff. But he was also a visionary. They have these transmission lines
mm-hmm.
from where it's produced. So for example, up near Amarillo, you have these transmission lines that run from Amarillo to effectively Georgetown, Texas, and Austin, and Dallas, and Houston, and Corpus.
Okay.
And the same thing when the solar farm is going to be built down there at Fort Stockton. You've got these transmission lines. Now, the state of Texas paid $7 billion to build these transmission lines.
Wow.
That's a lot.
But with, yeah, but without small chunk those of transmission lines, mm-hmm. you couldn't get the energy to where the people are.
Yeah.
And so that's the way it works. The windmills turn up in Amarillo. That energy is produced, goes down the transmission line, comes all the way into Georgetown, and then it's distributed to the people in Georgetown. The same thing with the solar farm.
And I had heard, this might have been back in like the mid-2000s, these windmills were turning, right? But there were no transmission lines to get that energy to homes, or at least there weren't enough transmission lines.
That's true.
And so the windmills were costing more to store that energy than they were saving us.
That's true.
So that problem's been solved.
That problem's been solved. And one of the cool things here is because of our, you know, we've got not only national attention, international attention. I've done interviews with The Economist magazine in London, a TV show in Japan, the Beijing.
We're just name dropping by countries here.
But the one that I'm most proud of is I did an interview in South America, and down there they only have a couple or maybe one or two TV stations, and they went to every country in South America. But what this is doing is, it's putting Georgetown.
That's pretty good. Yeah,
that's awesome.
That's our little bitty city here north of Austin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where I say, you know, Austin says, you know, keep Austin weird. And you know what I say, Austin, please keep your weird. Because we're different here in Georgetown.
Big time.
You think green energy would have originated in Austin, but it didn't. So this is the way it works, is you produce it, and it goes down the transmission lines, and then you turn on the switch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's really cool about this, too, is there's two things that I think will prevent this from going nationwide, and they have to change. One, the federal regulations don't allow us to sell energy across state lines. So if you change that, we could produce all this energy in Texas and sell it to Louisiana, Mississippi, Arkansas. Okay?
Wow, yeah.
Maybe we need Rick Perry back here to help kind of negotiate.
Well, that puts, like, you know, you take Texas, big, wide, open plains. We're big sunshine. You know, states like Texas are certainly at the advantage when it comes to things like that. Arizona's got plenty of sunshine. You know, the Southwest has plenty of sunshine. But go over into Louisiana, I mean, you get the thick forests. You can't put a windmill up above the trees necessarily. So those regulations seem like they're basically cutting off those states' chances to go renewable, right?
That's absolutely right.
That's a shame.
It is indeed, because, you know, Texas right now, we're number one in producing wind energy, and we're currently number five on solar. But with the solar plants being built all out in West Texas and so forth, we'll be number one probably within 5 years in both categories. And that's going to be huge, because this really creates a lot of economic activity in our state.
Oh, yeah, huge. You know, and I mean, I'm all for renewable energy, but it's really hard to make an argument to people to say, hey, pay more, do this from the goodness of your heart, especially when you're talking to businesses, right? Because businesses are responsible to stockholders or you know, whoever else. They've got to keep their price low to sell more. But when you give it a economic component that can actually save money, it's good for the environment. It also saves money. I mean, that sounds like a win-win. So why haven't more cities followed in Georgetown's footsteps?
That's a complicated question, but I'll do the best to answer it. There are some cities that don't own their own utility systems.
Okay.
So they just contract out.
Sure.
And
I lived in Waco and had like five or six different companies I could have bought energy from. And that was kind of new because I was coming from Austin. Austin has its own utility. Right. So
I came from San Antonio, which had CPS, down in San Antonio, City Public Service.
Yeah.
One opportunity, one shot.
Right. Down in Houston, I think you have 30 or 40 different choices who your service provider
exactly,
is.
Exactly, yeah.
And what happens is the citizens, all they want in some cities, all they want to know is they turn on their switch and the lights come on.
Sure.
They're not really price sensitive. And that does happen with those cities. One of the fundamental issues is you have bad contracts. Say 10 years ago that you contracted with a coal manufacturer to produce energy based on coal, and you signed a 20-year contract. You can't, even though you're halfway through the contract, you just can't stop the contract.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you have to let these bad contracts clear out and then get good contracts with maybe green energy. And, you know, even natural gas right now is at all-time lows.
Yeah.
And that's why more cities can't really do it. Now, in Houston, you do have options. You have a green option, but, you know, you have the electrons and protons going down the transmission lines. And basically what you're doing is buying that energy from a green provider, just like you would a natural gas provider.
Okay.
Yeah. And so you're making, now with us, our citizens, you know, we don't have a choice in Georgetown. If you're, well, that's not exactly true, but almost always in Georgetown, if you're within the city limits, you're going to buy from the city of Georgetown. We have a monopoly. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, there are parts of the city, unincorporated areas, you can buy from Encore and some other folks. But what we wanted to do is we thought our first and foremost duty and obligation was to provide electricity that was available and affordable to our citizens.
Uh-huh.
And what we're, you know, you're talking about this green energy. You know, electricity is a fungible good. It comes from, say, Amarillo, and you have to use it when it comes down that transmission line. Well, we have a company from Switzerland that opened up last year. It's called Olivo. Imagine this, a battery the size of an 18-wheeler, and then you have 200 of 18-wheelers in a warehouse. So at the end of the day, say it was a cooler day than we expected.
Okay.
So we've got some extra energy, like electricity, and we transfer that because we've contracted for X number of kilowatts for that day.
Okay.
And then we put it in those batteries. First thing in the morning, the first energy we use is from the batteries, and we put that back out on the grid for Georgetown. And if you could make that cost effective,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
you would have something. Because I truly believe, and I may not see it in my lifetime, but by 2045, I do believe that 80% of this country's electricity is going to be created by green energy.
That's amazing.
And me and the president of Exxon have the same views. He said a similar thing.
I know you're seeing a lot of those oil companies become energy companies.
They are indeed.
And mm-hmm. so they're trying to diversify their assets and you know, predict the future to a certain extent. And I think it's catching on. You know, certainly there's no end to the climate change debate, but you know, whichever side you believe, you know, no one's saying that these windmills are bad for the environment. You know, that's at least the safest place. And so whether you believe our CO2 emissions are causing this greenhouse effect and all the climate change, well, you know, yeah, you could be right on that, but you could also be very wrong on that. But no one here is saying you're going to be wrong about green energy, right?
No,
it's certainly
no.
A safe place to say, listen, it might not be causing it, but I'm going to go green anyway because that's definitely the safest bet. And I know that there's a business decision to do what Georgetown did, but my goodness, it's sent quite the shockwaves through the green community too, who's loving this from that, you know, anti-climate change perspective. I mean, we had Vice President Al Gore come to our fair city not too long ago. Ari Shapiro from NPR, if you guys listen to NPR, he was down here interviewing you. And so they're loving this as well. So it wasn't just a business decision for the city council. I mean, there's definitely that side that this is good for our earth.
Yeah, there's multiple benefits. First and foremost, business decision, that's worked out well. It's great for the environment. I'm not an environmental scientist, but doesn't it make sense? The less stuff you pollutants you put in the air, it's better, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
right. Yeah.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's part of why I drive a Prius.
That's right. And that's my point. Whether or not you believe that our CO2 emissions are causing the rise in temperature, it's still good and better if we don't put the pollutants into the environment, right?
Absolutely. The other benefit, too, is there's a lot of quality companies through this country that have robust green policies.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking, if they're going to expand their operations, look where green energy is both available and affordable.
Yeah.
And we have some existing companies here, say Walmart.
Yeah.
Walmart's great because, you know, they have green policies, and they could report back to Bentonville last year that 100% of the energy that this store in Georgetown consumed was 100% renewable.
That's
some
cool.
People, we've been a couple of years away from that 7 or 8 year drought that we had in Central Texas,
mm-hmm.
and it takes more water to produce fossil fuel energy than it does green energy.
Yeah.
So we're also conserving on water. The other thing, too, say, for example, we have CityCorp, it's a data center here in Georgetown. consume vast quantities of electricity. Because we have a 20 and 25 year fixed contracts, they can do some pretty serious and accurate budgeting on what their utility costs are going to be, which is a large component of their budget.
Yes.
And so that gives them cost certainty through the cost certainty we have through in our contracts.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of costs, is green energy more expensive than regular fossil fuel energy?
Okay, right now it's similar, and I get that question. But see, this was a long-term strategy. It's sort of like investing. We're investing over the 20 and 25-year time frame. It's sort of like the day traders in the stock market that, hey, did I make money today? That's not our approach. Our approach was to make sure that we had availability and affordability over the long term. And through these contracts, we have accomplished that.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. That is great. I just was curious. You hear that argument frequently.
You do, but
even like with eating and stuff, I mean, it always costs you more to have healthy food. And I get
right.
that. And it's
yeah.
just, but the benefit outweighs that
yeah.
by far.
Well, let's look at it this way. If inflation's 1.5 to 2% a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you assume that energy costs are normal, if inflation would be 1 to 2% a year, whatever. So multiply that, say 2%, so we can do it in our head, over 20 years. That's 40% increase in electricity costs for normal producers.
Mm-hmm.
In our case, you're not going to have that 40% because ours are fixed rate contracts.
Yeah.
Now we may have some, you know, in the overhead part or administration of the contracts in our utility department, but it won't be near as much. So what does it look like in 20 years? We will be, in my view, a lot more affordable than the surrounding communities when it comes to energy costs.
It certainly seems that way. I think it's a safe bet. I'll play devil's advocate though. What if there's so much green energy produced that the price, you know, goes way down?
Well, like I indicated before, there's a lot of cities that have bad contracts.
Sure.
And it's going to take some time for those bad contracts to work themselves out. In some cases, 20 years.
Yeah.
I like where we are right now. I like it because, you know, when you go up to Amarillo, you see the cows and the shadows that the turbines, they're standing in the shadow. And the farmers are still farming, whether it's cattle or crops.
Yeah.
So you have this low impact to the land.
Mm-hmm.
And I also like it because you see these farmers that are being compensated to have these windmills on their land, and they're doing well.
That's right. It's the next oil boom. Hey, sir, we found oil on your land has turned into, hey, sir, we think your land would be good for some windmills. And you're not going to have the heavy equipment come in, like, you know, and frack the heck out of the whole thing. And, you know, one of the scariest parts of fracking is the loss of water.
Right.
I mean, to me, it really is that loss of water that it takes to produce that oil. And I like our swimming holes and lakes too much.
I do too.
And I like having, you know, clean drinking water.
Sure.
So this is, you know, it is really cool. And I guess you're going to be making a lot of trips out to Fort Stockton, right? So
yeah, we're gonna go
you'll be
out
turning
there.
Into more of a road tripper.
Yeah, I'll be a road tripper just like you. We'll go out there to check on the status of the farm there. Doing some stuff traveling. On Earth Day, I'll be in Washington, D.C., giving a speech to the Smithsonian Institute.
and then this summer, you were talking about movies coming out featuring
we've got
Mayor Dale Ross.
Well, no, it's not. No.
But you're
like,
in them.
It's like 30 seconds a minute, and it's really about the green initiatives that we've taken in Georgetown. I was just the voice of the city talking to Jamie Redford, Robert Redford's son. Came here two summers ago and filmed for 3 days. He's got a documentary coming out on HBO called Happening. And then Vice President Gore was here, and he filmed for an afternoon with us. And it's called Inconvenient Truth, the sequel. And that'll be a documentary and a book coming out this summer. And Michael Bonfiglio, who did the Bo Jackson and the Strawberry and Doc Gooden 30 by 30 on ESPN, they came here, and they're at the Tribeca Film Festival in April From the Ashes, which is a documentary about going from coal to clean energy. And so I think we'll have a piece in that movie
from
as well.
From the Ashes. Sounds like a phoenix.
Yeah, hey.
So, but the point is, and my good friend Todd was giving me a little grief on name dropping on countries, but here we are.
No grief. I'm just impressed.
There's, you know, who would have thought that we're this little bitty city north of Austin, and we're getting international journalists that are coming here. You know, The Economist came on a Wednesday, and the senior energy writer from the Wall Street Journal was here on a Friday. And you're just shaking your head going, oh my goodness gracious.
You know, we used to be the only film crew you would see on the Georgetown Square, and now my ears perk up when I see another guy with a camera, like, hey, he's on our turf, you know? Like, when they're standing on the courthouse lawn.
I'm like, what are you doing? What are you filming?
Oh, it's NPR. Okay, that's fine. Whatever.
Yeah, to the permit.
No. Yeah. But it is really cool. And I hope that citizens of Georgetown are proud of this effort. So that you guys, y'all, thank you for carrying that green energy initiative for us. And I know there's lots of benefits commercially, but then also environmentally. So thank you guys very much for leading us into this new generation. We're kind of, I hope, you know, in 25 years, it's not going to be a big deal when a city our size has gone green.
Well, wouldn't that be great? Because, you know, I'm just the voice for the city of Georgetown, you know, city council. They develop policy, and then we have just so many talented people in the city that make this thing happen.
Yeah.
Whether it's Jim Briggs or Chris Foster, it's just amazing. It's a great time being in Georgetown. I haven't really had any negativity from our citizens. They sort of like the attention, you know, on a national basis. But at the end of the day, and Chet, you said it earlier, it's really a pocketbook issue.
Yeah.
And the citizens, if you can show them it's going to save them money, they're for it.
Yeah.
And if we can have environmental benefits as well, it's a win-win for everybody.
Absolutely. So maybe there's a lot of municipal folks listening to this. What's your advice for them on going green in their city?
Well, I tell you what, you need to look at the economics. And the economics, it looks like the market is cooperating, and you too could make this happen for your city.
Yeah.
It takes political will, and it takes somebody that knows what they're doing. And there's experts out there that can make this happen for their cities.
Cool. Very cool. Well, hey, thank you so much for joining us.
It's always good hanging with the day tripper and Todd.
So we're going to have a follow-up podcast. You're not going to talk about wind or solar. You're going to talk about what there is to eat in Fort Stockton.
We are going to tell you. I'll do a little preview for you. So if you and Todd want to go to Fort Stockton.
I've driven through Fort Stockton. I can't tell you how many times, because it's the gateway to Big Bend. You have to go through Fort Stockton, really, when you're heading out west, and have eaten at nowhere but the DQ.
The DQ
does the job, but I'd like to find a mom and pop.
Is like your Y intersection for Alpine or for Marfa.
Yeah, you kind of go south, you keep going.
I wish I remember the name of it. There's a great little restaurant right there on the main drag that's got some fantastic hamburgers.
It's called the DQ.
No, it's not the DQ. It's not the DQ.
The DQ has been my, you know, just perpetual... it's either on the way there getting burgers or on the way back getting a blizzard. You know, you can't argue with either. The DQ does its job. It's good.
It's been great being with you guys today.
Thank you so much, Mayor. We'll see you out on the streets of the most beautiful town square in Texas.
Amen.
Hey, guys, thanks so much for listening to the podcast. Of course, thanks to Mayor Dale Ross for joining us. That was a whole lot of fun. Hopefully you guys learned something about green energy and all that Texas, the great oil country of Texas, is doing to go green. It's pretty cool. Join us next time. We will be talking Texas for May 2017, joined by none other than the great Jordan Briel, and Todd White will be back with us, of course.
Yeah.
You can find all this at thedaytripper.com. New episodes coming up in May. Set your DVRs, folks. Thanks for joining us. Vaya con Dios, amigos.